This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired jockey Christina McManigal, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and extending a special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and everyone tuning in worldwide on our website, on your smartphone, or on your tablet. It's all there for you at horseracingradio.net. Keep in mind that each week a portion of the proceeds from Jock Talk are given back to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund to support those riders who have given our sport so much, and because of a catastrophic injury suffered while riding, they can no longer do so. So we encourage you to do everything you can to support the PDJF. They need your help, and you can learn more by going to pdjf.org. Christina, what's up?
Well, Mike, I have to say, excuse me, I'm glad to be inside in the studio on this lovely weather we have in Lexington, Kentucky, and we have a guest.
Yeah, we do. A very special guest here tonight. I've been wanting to talk with this individual since we started this program here a few months ago, and finally having the chance to. He is in studio with us. He is the native of Trinidad. The 41-year-old jockey has ridden all over the world, literally. He's been in Qatar. He's been in Macau. He's been in Singapore. Of course, his native Trinidad, Barbados, Canada, and now right here in the United States. And he has won more than 2,000 races worldwide. He is jockey Anthony Steven, and with us now on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's. Anthony, welcome to the program, my friend.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And again, I have been wanting to visit with you because you have so many great stories. And your career is really the epitome of persistence and perseverance. And I've had a chance to get to know you over the past couple of years here, and it's been an absolute delight. And I think our listeners are going to enjoy hearing your story.
I don't know where to start.
How about Trinidad?
Okay.
Growing up in Trinidad, what was that like? How did you first get introduced to horse racing? Let's start there.
Okay. In Trinidad, in my family, there's 13 jockeys.
Whoa. So, wow. This is like the Mirages, right?
Yes.
Rajiv.
It wasn't the media, like the close relatives. Sorry about that. The close family, really, like grandmom family and, you know, extended family, but altogether 13 jockeys. So I kind of were forced to be a jockey, really. You know, wake up in the morning, see my uncles and them going to work and taking me to see the horse racing. I kind of got involved in it. But my first love was soccer, to be honest with you.
Really?
I was doing really good in school in soccer, and I was always the small one. And, you know, I get pushed around, and so I was kind of forced to quit. So I decided, you know what, let me try the horse racing. And it was funny because my uncle used to always bring his friends home and talk about racing and which horse is better than which horse and, you know, who's going to win this race and crazy talk. But the funny thing about it, in my family, they were never a leading jockey. And, you know, people laugh about that and talk about it. Like, oh, yeah, in the Steven family, there's no champion jockey. So I was like, you know, one day I'm going to prove them wrong.
Yeah.
I'm going to show them that, you know, this name can be leading jockey, and I'm going to go worldwide and, you know, make a good impression with it. So
how big is horse racing in Trinidad?
It's big, but... You know, it's for the Caribbean people, really. Like, we have one of the international racetrack at Santa Rosa Park. It's a beautiful track. We used to go right-handed before. We had, funny about it, we had 3 tracks in Trinidad for a small country. Now we have this one I would call it international track. It's beautiful. So back to
the family.
Yeah, back to the family. I got accepted in the jockey school. I graduated in, I think it was 6 months to 9 months, 1991. First year, the season was almost to end, so I got the most promising apprentice jockey. That's like a bug right over here. Then the second year of racing, I was the leading jockey. So right away, I started to get noticed, and me being leading jockey was not really about me because I was still learning, and I had no clue what I was doing. I was riding for the best stable in Trinidad, who pretty much shipping all his horses from America, from most of them was from England, and they were just the best horses. So he would tell me what to do. I would ride the race based on what he's telling me, and the horses will win. So I was kind of bored with it.
It's a great game.
Yeah. And the fact that I was in a bug boy, it was minus in the weight, so it helped a lot. But in 3 months, I lost it. Then second year, come as a gentleman, which is really tough. You ride an equal to everyone. I proved myself again. I was a leading rider again. So right away, I start getting noticed with all the trainers, other stables. But because I ride into this best stable, my trainer never allowed me to ride for other stables because he always has 4 horses in the race. So I get to pick the best one and I win. So now he cut down because he was going to retire. I'm trying to branch off to other stables. They were like, well, when you were riding for him, you didn't want to ride for us.
Uh-oh.
So it's kind of like, you know what? You got to fit in with everybody else. So it started getting a bit tough. And there was the Christmas meet, which is the biggest meet back home besides the Derby. It had all these stake races. A lot of jockeys come from foreign. Julie Crone came, Karen Fallon. There's a lot of big names from England. All these jockeys that come because a lot of the English horses used to come to Trinidad.
That had to be a thrill for you.
Yeah,
to ride with those
Kevin Daly and
yeah,
a lot of the big names that I can't remember right now. But it was fun to ride among these riders that you see on TV. At that time, I could only see them on TV, and I was always, you know, thinking about traveling. So it was kind of nice to meet them face to face and ride with them. So that meet, I won 4 of the stake races, and one of the owner was friends with a trainer from Ireland called Danny Murphy, who was looking for a jockey in Macau. And right away, I was linked up with Danny Murphy. He asked me if I wanted to come because Macau track is a similar racetrack to Trinidad, which is pretty much speed riders. That's what they call us. So I cannot get in contact with him. I decided I'm going to give it a try because my goal was always to leave because, it was, like I said, it was difficult after losing your bug, which happens to a lot of good riders in America too. They, you know, they show potential and then they finish their bug and you don't hear their name anymore. So I was kind of trying to expand. So I took the contract. I went for 3 months. It ended up being 7 years.
Wow.
Because I loved it.
Yeah.
It had so much success.
What did you like about it?
What I like about it was jockeys from all over the world. It was not like you're racing among the locals. It was jockeys from New Zealand, from France, from Australia, from England, from Japan, from Panama. And that's how I met Jose Carrellos. 1 year, Jesus Casinon came for a 3 months contract.
Love Jesus.
Yeah.
Very one of nice the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Yeah.
So it was kind of nice knowing him. Alex Bittier, I met him there. So Alex Bittier was the one actually after 7 years, he was getting bored at a place too and kind of branched me off to come into America. He told me we would have the same agent and, you know, we can link up and he can show me around the place. And so I kind of liked it. So we both signed that we resigned, being under contract over there, and we left. Came to America. Joe Bravo, I think, just broke his leg in Mammoth Park. And Alex right away got his agent. And right away he started doing good.
Right.
The agent already had another rider, and he was only allowed 2 riders. So I was kind of left hanging. So I was kind of, you know, traveling from racetrack to racetrack to find my own way. It didn't work out, so I got a contract in Vancouver, Canada, which is Hastings Park, because I know, you know, jockeys always have some family somewhere, meet jockeys, and we became a family right away. So I flew over there and started racing there. Excuse. And did pretty good the first 2 years and had a few spills. And, you know, you can tell from being a jockey that when you fall, you start back, you lose all your business. You got to start all over again. There's always a new face waiting to take your place.
It's the most frustrating part of the game, in my opinion.
Well, and we were talking before we came on the air with this program here tonight that not only do you lose the business, but when you're off for a period of time like that, even if it's a brief period of time, like 3 or 4 weeks, you lose a lot of the conditioning that you had built up. And it's amazing how much you can lose in a 3 or 4 week period, isn't it?
I'm actually shocked about that because I train every day. I run a lot. You know, I have the mechanical horse at home, the exerciser that I work out on. I have a treadmill in my basement. I go hiking, but I can ride one race after a week. And I'm like, whoa, you got to give these guys respect.
Yeah, after taking a week off.
After taking a week off.
You can feel that much of a difference.
It's different in your breathing. I mean, you're huffing and puffing like you're not even fit. Your leg muscles hurt. I mean, it's incredible.
Wow.
You use every single muscle in your body when you're riding a race. So it's all of that coming together. And when you're fit, it's all working in sync. But when you lose a little bit of fitness, you have to overcompensate. So one part of your body, your legs have to do more because you're breathing, whatever it might be. You're just, it's tough.
Right.
It's tough.
Like, how about the mental aspect? Do you get fatigued mentally as well if you haven't been in it for a little bit of time?
I'm pretty sure you do because, for example, you're reading a program with a race and you got a horse with speed and you got four horses with speed. You got to try to maintain your position because that's what the trainer wants you to be, is be involved in the race early. And if other jockeys taking you on, it's kind of like you got to be there. So mentally, it's killing you, plus physically, you're not ready for that.
Right.
So. Exactly. Whenever you're also physically exhausted, you're not as sharp. You're not.
Right.
You're thinking more about, oh my God, my legs hurt.
Yeah. I've always thought that was a very difficult position for a jockey to be in, and I've had several jockeys tell me and lay out that very same scenario you just did, Anthony, where the trainer comes to you before the race and says, "I want you on the lead or up close to the pace." Well, okay, if they go 20-3 for the opening quarter, do you still want me on the lead going head-to-head with another horse or two? Yes. That's a very difficult position for a jockey, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very difficult. And I had older riders tell me, like, because they know for a fact they've been fired for that, for trying to ride a smart race and not riding the trainer race. And I can tell you in my career, I had a lot of times that if I would ride my race, the outcome probably be better,
right?
But you're trying to protect your job and you ride to the trainer's instruction, but you still get fired.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
I find that just like it's good to get to know a horse that you're riding a race,
exactly.
You also need to get to know the trainer because every trainer is different. Some, they tell you, you know, good luck, just ride your race. Other trainers will give you absolutely, you know, a page long of instructions and details. And you know, Anthony, that when you get a break from those gates, anything can happen. Yeah, right. So it's you kind of have to know who you're riding for and what their preferences are as well.
So what's better, when the trainer just says, "Hey, good luck, go get them"? Is that the best?
I honestly ride a better race like that. I mean, the trainer is qualified to train a horse. I'm doing my job. You hire me to do a job, let me do my job.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying that's the way it is, but I prefer that.
Yeah.
I do much better when I can ride my race because 9 out of 10 times, you know, you're in a situation where you got a speed horse. The trainer wants you on the lead because it says that in a book. Oh, you might be the only speed in the race, but the gates open and the horse stumbles.
Right.
And then mentally, it's like, the trainer wants me on the lead. He tell me 4 times. This horse runs better on the lead. You can see that, you know, anybody can tell you that by reading the book. So do you give the horse a chance to find his legs, ride your race from behind and, you know, hope for the best? Or rush him to the lead and then you finish last, and you know what I mean? So it's difficult.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, it's very, very true.
Yeah. And I hear that scenario from jockeys all the time. And I can only imagine, because you're right. Once the gates open, everything changes,
Everything changes.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So Johnny Velasquez used to tell us that he had a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, and even further if he needed it, which he was hoping he didn't.
Right.
Same way for you, Anthony?
Same way for me, but I do notice the big name jockeys, and I have to say this way, is because they get more breaks. because they're Johnny V, you know, Castellano. These guys...
Meaning what? Like, what do you mean, gets a break?
With a trainer, because they trust them more than they would trust somebody whose name is not on top.
Right, I got you.
They would more say, well, you know what? I told him go to the lead, but he is capable of doing what he does best.
Right.
So he might not get fired from riding a horseback. But a guy who don't have a name, you know, they kind of like, kind of possess that, yeah, to be where they want supposed to be. So it makes you ride a bad race.
Yeah, you're always on a short leash.
Exactly.
Right, and they've proven themselves so many times. People, yeah, like you said, I obviously trust them, but when you're trying to go out there and make a name for yourself, there's a lot of pressure because you know that there's that sliver of doubt in their mind that maybe this guy is not going to follow right. my instructions. Maybe he doesn't know exactly how to ride a good race, whatever. So there's that. You have to prove yourself over and over and over and over yeah. again. And, well, like we were talking, I much prefer, however, a trainer just tells me the horse's tendencies.
Yes.
And that's the best way to
use a discretion.
Exactly. Exactly.
If the horse goes to the lead and you can get the lead, by all means, try to slow him down and save him for the end.
Exactly.
Rather than telling you, you must get the lead.
Right. Or if a trainer yeah. tells you this horse hates to be on the inside, don't right. get him on the inside. Okay, well, I'll use that information and ride the race accordingly. But,
right.
but you know, there's lots of politics and mm-hmm. good judgment that you must use on your part.
And then good agents already waiting for you to make a mistake.
Oh, absolutely.
They say, man, my jockey would have ride to your instructions and put his horse in. You know what I mean? I mean, it's their
right.
job.
Right, right.
But
right.
we live in this world. That's right. just to yeah. be competing.
Your agent's doing the same thing.
Right.
You're yeah. just there waiting to jump on any yeah, exactly. open opportunity.
Visiting with jockey Anthony Steven here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget, if you miss any portion of this show, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. Listen to the podcast at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Anthony, I want to go back just a little bit here, and we started talking about you growing up in Trinidad and how you had so many members, 13 members of your family that were involved in the sport somehow. But your parents didn't really want you to be a jockey, did they?
No, my dad, when he told me, when I actually mentioned that I want to be a jockey, he told me over my dead body. He said his brother, which is the closest family member, you know, is a jockey. He said, I visit my brother in the hospital more than at the racetrack.
Wow.
He said, he will never be a jockey as long as I live.
Wow. Yeah.
Did that make you want to do it more?
It kind of did, because it's kind of what you do when you're a kid. Yes. They tell you don't do this, you do it, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow. That's amazing. And that's your uncle, Michael?
Michael.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, you said jockey school, that only lasted, what, 6 to 9 months, you said?
The jockey school is you go to the school, and it all depends on how you improve.
Oh, okay.
So some jockeys stay 3 years, four
right,
years.
Right,
all on how, like, I went in there, and in 6 months, I was I was ready for life.
So you obviously just took on just like that.
Well, what helped me a lot is an ex-jockey called Trevor De Freitas. He met me at the track. My name was Jockey Fall Guy. Every time I was a loose horse, I gotta be Anthony. Because I wanted to learn so bad that I was getting on horses jockeys won't get on.
Right.
And his horses would run off with me. You know, they'll be going the wrong way on the track and they'll be clocking me. That's how funny it was. You know, so my name was Jockey Fall Guy. So one of the newspaper actually write Jockey Fall Guy Anthony Steven to champion jockey, you know, because that's how funny it was. That was literally my name. So this one guy saw me one day cleaning the mud off my face and everyone laughing at me. And he's like, son, you're going to kill yourself. Come to my farm. You got to start off like that before you come into a racetrack and learn to ride. You got to know the basic. So I went to his farm because he had, you know, a really good name and his farm is very popular back home at the time. So he took me in there and I started cleaning stalls, cutting grass for horses and doing all the basic work before I even got on a horse.
Wow.
And his farm, you know, had like 14 stallions. So he also exercised the stallions. So I started riding the broodmares in the stall, just sitting on their back, learning how to make a knot. I mean, I knew all these things already, but he wanted to teach me from, you know, the ground up. So I was kind of upset because he's treating me like I don't know what I'm doing, but I didn't know the details. And what do you do when a horse runs off with you? First thing people do is raise their hand and they go fast, you know?
Right.
So anyway, he was showing me how it's done, and it's not about this guy is stronger than you. It's all about, you know, techniques and all that.
So what are you supposed to do when a horse runs off with you?
Pray to God.
Are there things you can do to...
Well, some people bang their head. Some people, you know, kind of use their core muscles, you know. But raising a hand and sawing on the mouth, some horse, they put their tongue over the bit, mm-hmm. or they have a bad tooth and it hurts them, they're not going to stop.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They make up their mind to run. Mm-hmm. So the key is if a horse decides to run off, you ain't going to stop it.
They're 1,200 pounds.
Yeah.
What's the worst experience you've ever had with that?
The worst experience I had is a horse running off with me the wrong way, tried to make the gap.
No.
Hit the post when he couldn't make it. Mm. And I was knocked out. I hit the post from my back. And they call it an afterlife situation where I'm seeing my friends standing. You okay? And I'm like, hey, I'm right behind you. What are you guys talking about?
Right.
No.
I got scared when I heard my name. Anthony, are you okay? And I kind of like, what's going on here? So I walked up and I made face-to-face contact with my buddy.
What?
And then immediately I woke up. I was in a hospital with a doctor had flashing in my lights, in my eyes, sorry.
Wow.
And I'm telling my dad, I said, Dad, I saw myself. And he said, listen, you hit your head. You probably have a headache. Get in Trinidad, who knows about concussion or whatever.
Right.
So that was scary. And the doctor said for like 25 minutes I was gone. I was knocked out.
What?
Yeah, it is scary. I'm sure your dad wanted to kill you at that point, right? Because he didn't want you to do this in the first place.
And at that time we never had body protectors.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you wear helmets?
Yeah.
Yes, thank goodness. Yeah. Thank goodness.
Wow. Yeah. Unbelievable. Just incredible. So what was your first big break? Was it going to Macau?
No, I would say from being in a jockey school, this leading trainer, Eric Colgerant, he was stabled at that track where the jockey school was. And he gets to see every year, he pretty much picked the leading jockey. Whoever ride for him is going to be the leading jockey because he's the leading trainer every year. So everybody wants to be in a stable. So he would sit there and with his binoculars and clock. And, you know, he would go to the jockey school and tell the tutor, hey, I want so-and-so live in my house. So he picks which one he wants. You go to his house and live.
Uh-huh.
And that's how you get your break. So automatically, when I got that contract with him, I was going to be the next leader.
Right. And you said you wanted to be champion jockey. That was one thing that motivated you.
Yeah.
So when you finally got to the top of the mountain, what was that like?
Well, when I got that break already, I was like, oh my God, like I said what I wanted to become and, you know, and it didn't happen yet, but it's like automatic. If I get hurt, I mean, it's not going to happen. He's going to replace me. So my goal was pretty much just to maintain safety and do my best to be there. So when I became the leading jockey in Trinidad, right away I was looking elsewhere because that was my goal, to make my name worldwide.
Right.
So already when I got this contract, I didn't hesitate. I took it right away. And first race I rode, I won 99-1.
Wow.
No.
And that's another creepy story. Like it's crazy. I think I told you the story with the nun.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, tell the story, though. It's a great story.
In England, I'm sitting there, never left Trinidad before. First, I went to Jamaica and Barbados in the Caribbean. So for me, traveling to London, it was scary. It was a huge airport. So my gate, I never forget this, gate number 9, my flight to Hong Kong. But I got 6-hour layover, like to wait for my flight. So I'm waiting there 6 hours. I'm waiting, gate 9. This is my gate, like 10, 20 other flights came and go from that gate, but I will not move. That's my gate. So I think it was 40 minutes or something for boarding. This nun was walking straight towards me. she made eye contact and smiled. So I look around, and she was smiling at me. And then she came and sat right next to me. I said, "Hi, how are you doing today?" I said, "Oh, I'm a little nervous. First time I'm flying by myself so far away, you know." She says, "Don't worry. I know you're a jockey, and I know you're going to ride, and you're going to win your first race." And patted me on my shoulder. It freaked me out.
What?
And then she opened her bag, and she gave me a little laminated prayer. She said, "Keep this in your helmet." I don't know if she knows about jockeys, but she tell me, "Keep it in your helmet at all times. It's a prayer. Read it. Put it back in your helmet when you race."
You still have it?
Yeah.
Wow.
You still keep it in your helmet?
No, because the new helmets now, you can't go under the sponge like the Calientes.
Yeah. Right.
So my wife keep telling me I should, you know, but I have it in my drawer home.
I think I just got chills.
I know.
And I've heard it before. You've told me the story before. So
I've never heard that. That's incredible.
The flight was, I think, 9 hours flight from London, or 8 hours to Hong Kong. The whole flight, I was freaked out. I didn't know where the lady went after that.
Where she came from?
Where she came from in the flight, was she in my flight? Anyway, I arrived. And as soon as I met the trainer who came and picked me up, the memory was gone. So right away, I forget what happened. I was more into excited because I arrived on a Friday. I'm racing Saturday. So the next day's racing, they're showing me the track, where the markers are, you know, and pretty much what I need to do.
Sure.
So he was telling me, "This one horse I put you on is not a good horse. He's slow. Two starts ago, he didn't come out the gates. So, but it's the only horse I had to run this week. But don't worry, it's a perfect horse to get to know the surface. And next week, I got all my good horses running." So I was like, okay, whatever. So he legged me up, went to the track, looking around everything. They don't have ponies over there, so you pretty much go on your own. Get to the starting gates, and I'm looking around and trying to be friendly with everybody. And right away, I was thinking what the lady told me. Like, you know what she told me? I'm like, "Not on this horse." I swear, I was like, "Well, she's wrong. Not on this horse." I was number one. Put me in the gates first. And the funny thing is, the starter, his name is Philip Waldron. He was one of the riders, came from England to Trinidad. He's a starter over there. So it's funny, I know him, but I don't think he remembered me. So anyway, he was telling me he's going to say last horse to go in. That's the rule. And get ready, because the gates is going to open. I said, okay, thank you for that. So my horse planted his foot on the ground. Like, you can tell he ain't going to come out. That's going to probably break glass. The gates open, and I eject on the saddle. That's how fast he left. I was on the lead by 5 lengths in front. And whoa. I keep looking back like, was it a false start? Or, you know, like what happened? You know, and keep looking back, and I'm looking, okay, 300 meters to go. Okay, different here, you know. Top of the lane, I'm like 2 furlongs to the wire. And I'm still like 4 in front. So I said, I better look like I'm riding. I started riding his horse. I didn't hit him once. And I won the race.
Wow, 99-1.
Yep, the horse name was Scarlet Truss. Never forget that.
I want to have the nun on our handicapping program. Yeah. So can we track her down? Because she knew ahead of time that you were going
to
win.
And
that
was 99-1.
All right, we're going to get to a quick break. We're visiting with Anthony Stephen here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's. Stay with us. It's all right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz, and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Xacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. First, let's head to Beaumont Park where Javier Castellano leads the jockey standings with 15 wins. His week was highlighted by a win in the Grade 1 Bosberg Stakes aboard Rockfall. Castellano had a solid week by winning 27% and coming in the money on 48% of his mounts. For the week, Castellano finished with 9 wins, 3 seconds, and 4 thirds for earnings of $695,000. Luis Contreras had a solid week at Woodbine as he took the full page stakes aboard Amy's Gizmo. Contreras won 31% and finished in the money on 52% of his mounts. For the week, Contreras finished with 9 wins, 3 seconds, and 3 thirds for earnings of $268,000. Matthew Ruspoli had a great week at Gulfstream Park, highlighted by wins in the Groomstick Stakes aboard Valid and the Mr. Steel Stakes aboard Lochte. Ruspoli won an incredible 50% of his mounts and came in the money on 70%. For the week, Ruspoli finished with 5 wins, 1 second, and 1 third for earnings of $152,000. Finally, Drayden Van Dyke earned his first Jockey's Guild Jockey of the Week award by winning 2 different stakes races at 2 different tracks. He started the weekend with a win in the Grade 1 Rodeo Drive Stakes at Santa Anita aboard Photocall, which was his first victory in a Breeders' Cup win-and-you're-in race. Drayden then traveled to the plains of Oklahoma, where he won the Remington Park Oaks aboard the Tom Proctor train to include Betty. For the week, Van Dyke finished in the money on 50% of his mounts for earnings of $358,000. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit jockeytalk360.com or follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
As the field turns for home, and it's Golden Mocha! Golden Mocha coming back on! Mobile unit, big red mics all hard on the far outside! Hotep 2, Mob the Warrior, but it's Golden Mocha! The Panamanian Invader, the undefeated Golden Mocha to go all of the way in the Prince of Wales Stakes! Anthony Stephen and Golden Mocha, no doubt about it now! Mobile unit second, and big red mic, Hotep, Mob the Warrior, Captain Canuck, and who we gonna call? Golden Mocha in 156 and 2/5 seconds.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Continuing to visit with jockey Anthony Stephen, a really fun first half of the program. If you did miss any portion of this show, head back to our website later on this evening or at your leisure. It's all there, a replay of this show and all of our Jock Talk shows at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. You heard the clip there of Golden Mocha winning the 2010 Prince of Wales at Hastings. And Christina, you've had big wins in your career. This was one of the big wins for Anthony Stephen as well.
Oh my gosh, I watched the replay last night. That was what a cool horse. What a cool horse. And at the top of the lane, I didn't think he was going to get it. He just hit that next gear, and we'll have to talk about that story as we continue, for sure.
Yeah, and Anthony, you told us that was somewhat of a bizarre scenario as to how you got aboard Golden Mocha as well.
Yeah, it was. it was not Hastings, it was Fort Erie.
Oh, Fort Erie, that's right. Yeah, I did say Hastings, Fort Erie.
Yeah, well, I was racing at Woodbine at the time, and Brian Lynch had the horse, and you know, sometimes in the morning when you finish work or you have nothing else to get on, a lot of jockeys go at the rail and talk with trainers and watch horses go around. And for about a week, I was watching this horse running off with the Galloboy, like literally running off. And I was like, whoa, this is a nice looking horse. So I'm thinking, wait a minute, he worked yesterday. Not realize he was running off.
No.
Then the next day again, he's flying by again. So I walk up to Brian Lynch. I say, wow, that's a nice looking horse. He said, yep, that's a Rennie Douglas horse. Came from Panama. He's a sprinter. But we, he was trying to get him to relax because his goal was to go into Queen's Plate. He got sick. So they missed the Queen's Plate. And the next step was the Prince of Wales, the second leg of the Triple Crown. So he told me, you know, if you want to come and help me with it, you're more than welcome, like a joke, right? So I was like, hey, don't challenge me. He said, well, you can come tomorrow and show me what you can do. I said, well, first of all, I'm not going to take him to the main track. I'm taking him to the small ring, you know, and get him to relax, to try different bits and whatever, and go from there. And he was like, well, that's fine. So that's how it started. Then he told me, why don't you come gallop for me? And you'll ride the other races. I was like, perfect. Making 800 a week. And riding horses for Brian Lynch, who is one of the top trainers in Woodbine.
Sure.
So also I knew Rennie Douglas from racing with him and, you know, in Gulfstream. We always make fun and make jokes. So started galloping the horse, not even thinking about I'm riding this horse. I'm just doing my job. He's paying me to get on the horse and I'm doing what I was born to do is help, you know, difficult horses. That's how I started off. A mean jockey fall guy. So anyway, I was happy that, you know, making progress the first week with the horse. So I said, hey, I'm ready to go to the big track. He said, sure. I said, yep. Went to the track and I was slapping the horse on his face, coming around, just showing off, you know, because it was so relaxed. He didn't even pick the bit up. I was like, I'm proud of this. Galloping 2 miles with a bow in the reins. So he called Rennie Douglas and told him, like, you know, the horse is starting to relax and, you know, I think we can get him to go the mile and an eighth. So Rennie was happy with that. So about 2 weeks into that, Brian Lynch told me we're going to take him to Fort Erie and see how he breathes on the surface, you know, like how he feel and whatever. So that morning, I didn't get on anything at Woodbine, went to Fort Erie and breathed him the same distance the race going to be. And he did the time faster than what the race ran in the year before.
Woo.
Wow.
Excuse. So he had two agents telling him, like, this is the real deal. This horse will win this race. But he had a horse called Sugar Mike, the one the Queen's Plate is also going to be in the race, which is a really nice horse too. So Brian Lynch said, well, I'll think about it. So he didn't really say he was going to run. Next morning, he came to work with a smile on his face. He said, he won't believe what's happening with his horse. I said, what do you mean? He said, Rennie Douglas called me and he says that, you know, you're second in the standings at Fort Erie, you ride in the track really good, keep you on the horse. I said, what do you mean? I'm riding this horse? He said, yes. So now it's almost like a blessing to get on this horse now every morning. It's like, that's my project. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I had the winner of the race. But again, Sugar Mike is in there and, you know, he's one of the best horses. It wasn't Sugar Mike. It was, I forgot the name. It's Nick Gonzalez horse.
Okay.
Keeps in Sugar Mike. So race day come now. I'm there in post parade and I keep looking at the favorite. And I'm like, he got speed. I got speed. We got two other cheap speed in the race. You know, I'm the longest shot on the board. If I can get him to relax, I win this race. So I broke. And he was sitting pretty relaxed until the field came to me and then he snatched a bit around the first turn. You can see they tried to squeeze me there. So I had to ask him to move forward so I won't take, you know, because he never got sand on his face before. He was a sprinter in Panama.
Right.
So he's known to be on the lead and, you know, so that can affect him too if he get dirt on his face. So I kind of asked him without him snatching a bit and running off of me. And then the number 10 horse, I think, went with me. David Clark, and he was smooching up the back. After the race, he told me why he was doing that. He was trying to run my horse into the ground, you know, and that's what good jockeys do when they read a racing form. You know, horses got speed, might not make the distance. They try to make them work for it. So they burn the energy in the first part of the race.
He's smooching.
He's smooching.
But he's trying to get your horse to respond to
exactly,
that.
Because his horse was so relaxed. He could have started whipping and horse won't go faster.
Right.
He was smooching and every time he smooched, my horse would throw his ass back, pin it back and snatch a bit. And I was kind of like, you know what? I'm just going to have to go with the flow because if I take back, he's going to shove me off.
What about his horse though? Isn't his horse doing the same thing?
His horse was not. His horse was not responding from the smooching.
Ooh, okay.
So I was like, that's why he keep doing it to my horse.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of like keeping my horse in that position so I won't be behind him. But again, my horse started like relaxing. Like all of a sudden his ears wasn't pinned back. And, you know, I threw the lines away and he relaxed. So I said, you know what? I think we got a shot here. So when I look around, I saw Big Red Mike is the horse name. He came up the back on the outside, and you can see like they all start riding. I can see their hands moving, and I was like, wait a minute, I'm still sitting. I'm just going to sit as long as I can sit. I'm not going to even move. If it happens, it happens. If I lose, I lose. Top of the lane, they all were riding, and I was taking the turn, and then I smooched on my horse, and he snatched a bit so hard, like he just broke from the gates. And he took off with me, and he started drifting out a bit in the top of the lane, but he was just getting leg weary, but he was just much better than these horses.
Wow. Wow. That's a great story.
What a feeling that had to be to have worked with this horse for so long, to get him. You played such a vital role in his training, and then yes. to get the victory with that horse, that had to be such a satisfying feeling.
It was, you know, and like, again, even when you rode, you wake up in the morning for these kind of scenarios. Like, you go to work to see your favorite horse, you know, you go to work to meet the trainers who respect you. It's kind of, it motivates you. So it's kind of nice being involved like that.
What's your most memorable win?
I would say it would be the Stewards Cup in Trinidad, because that was the first year I started riding. I turned 18 years, and that day was my birthday. And I won the great Group 1 race in Trinidad.
Oh, wow.
So it was a lot of memories. Plus, my father was still alive, so he got to see that. He died a year after, age 36.
Yep.
So wow. He didn't want me to be a jockey, and he was alive to see me, like, winning the biggest race back home.
What was his reaction?
Well, the horse name was Sweet Tassa. And back home, they beat the drums. And it was kind of embarrassing because he was standing by the rail beating this drum like...
Wait, your dad was beating the drum?
Yeah.
Fans do this?
Yeah, back home, people do that. Back home, you could stand at the rail, pretty much lean over, and the horse can hit you in your head. That's how close you are. That's how it used to be, actually, in the old tracks.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
All right. And so your dad was standing there beating his drum.
Yeah, he was so excited. Yeah.
Wow.
Like I say, it was embarrassing for me because all my friends were there and I'm like, what the hell? Stop doing that.
Wow.
Because of the horse name, right? Sweet Tassa.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Right. And that was a Group 1 race.
Yeah, 18 years old.
And you're 18. Was that the first, I'm sure, the first one you've ever won? And at that time. To go from jockey fall guy at that same track to win the group one.
Funny thing is, 6 days later, the horse that finished third in that race ran back in 6 days in the Gold Cup, which is another group one race, but it's 1,800 meters. So the trainer gave me the ride, and I won the race by 12 lengths. So in 6 days, I won 2 group one races. I still hold the record in Trinidad for that. The youngest jockey and the first jockey to do it in the same year.
Wow. Yeah.
Do you ever think about going back home and riding again, even just for a big day?
I actually did it 6 years ago. They invited me to ride the stake races. Frankie Dettori was there. He actually goes there every year now. They invite the English jockeys, so it's European against the Caribbean. But 6 years ago I went, and the very first race, I haven't been home in 6 years. At that time, first race I rode, I won. So it was kind of nice because back home, I won't say a star, but back home I'm well known and people haven't seen me. They only, you know, last time they saw me is when I won the Prince of Wales, because the summer cast that race, because it was a big race. It was kind of like they know that I won that race. The whole country was behind, you know, they're calling me, Facebook message. And so it was exciting to go back home and they keep calling me, Golden Mocha, Golden Mocha. So I went back for the Gold Cup and the Stewards Cup. That's the two races I went back. And because I held the record for it, everybody was like, oh, you can close your eyes and win these races because these races were meant for you, you know? It was a good feeling. I finished fourth in that race, but it was nice winning the first race because I got 3 kids in Trinidad. They were really little, or two of them weren't even born yet, so they never saw me race. So it was kind of funny.
Wow.
That when I won that race, they can take the picture.
Yeah.
And, you know, my daughter was crying because she was so happy and to wow. see what a real race is, you know.
You've had several different times in your life when you've been away, obviously, from home, but doing all that traveling and riding in all the different countries means that you've been away from your family and from your children quite often. How difficult is that for a jockey?
Family life in horse racing in general is very tough on family. Like, I was divorced twice because of that same situation. My first wife from Trinidad, I got this contract in Macau. It's a different culture for her. For me, it was about racing. For her, it was moving, being away from her family and friends, you know, and she couldn't adjust, and she wanted no part of that. She wanted to move back to Trinidad. I promised these people, so I'm on a contract. I can't leave. The money was good. It's something I want to do when I started racing, is to travel. And that was the best place to be because so many cultures, you know, different countries and all that. So we split up because of that. Got divorced. Then I met my second wife. She's from Holland. She came to the international school. She traveled all over the world also. She loved to travel. I'm like, this is perfect. She's not involved in horse racing, which is kind of what I want. I don't want to go home and talk about horses. Like, man, you see that, you know?
Right, yeah.
So it was kind of what I was looking for too. And, you know, and she's from Holland. I'm like, I get to see Holland, you know, because I love traveling. So, you know, we got married. We had two kids. Then we moved to Canada, Vancouver, which she loved. My both kids were born deaf. So there was a school there for them called the Vancouver Royal Center, which worked out perfect. Then I became landed Canadian, so I can race at Woodbine. You have to be a landed Canadian. And that was where everybody wants to be. That's, you know, the best racing there. It's, you know, Vancouver was a bullring track, you know. So I decided to move there. So we all moved. The schooling for my kids were not really good as Vancouver. She hated Toronto. She wanted to move back to Europe. So I was in a situation, move to Europe, go to Holland, and do what? Sell cheese, clean wheel mill, learn Dutch. It was like, you know what? In Trinidad, we can hardly speak English.
You'd fit right in over there, though. Yeah, I'd say you fit right in Holland, wouldn't you?
Yeah, right.
With your nice tan and,
yeah,
of course,
exactly.
The accent.
Yeah, the funny thing is, she would call me sometime and be angry at me, like, oh, man, I can't believe. Every time I pick these kids up in school, somebody would say, oh, are you the babysitter? Because they have a tan, and in Holland, she's all white. So it doesn't add up, you know? So she's upset about that. She's blonde, you know, blue eyes. The kids have a tan, so. So, yeah, that was the end of my second marriage. So I was, you know, in Canada, Woodbine. That's how I started working with Brian Lynch, the Golden Mocha story. And
yeah.
Golden Mocha brought me to America with the Super Derby. Came for the Super Derby when he said, you know, wherever the horse go, you're going to go with the horse, which was very nice of him. Finished fifth in the race, got hooked with Hurricane Ike. He killed me on the lead, mm-hmm. and my horse didn't relax at all, so I had to fight him the whole way. Maybe I shouldn't. I should have just let him go, but I tried to ride him the same way as the Prince of Wales. It didn't work out. Rene was, you know, telling me, that's racing. Don't worry about it. The trainer was new jockey now. So that was the end of, you know, my partnership with Golden Mocha. Then I met my wife now. She lives in Kentucky.
She was an absolute sweetheart, by the way. I had the chance to meet her, so I've gotten to know her. Yeah.
How I got involved with her is because of Larry DeMerritt with the same stable, Butterfly Stable, and Rennie Douglas. They kind of, the same. Some of the owners have Good Friend Stable, so it was the same people. So she came up with Larry and the owners from Canada, and that's how I met them at Woodbine.
You know what I like most about his wife, Carla, is a doctor. And when Anthony will have an injury on the racetrack, she will be the first one there. If, assuming that she's there at the races, she'll be the first one there. And she has to make sure that those EMTs are handling everything properly. Yeah. They're not going to sneak one by her.
That is convenient.
Well, the funny thing about it, at Keeneland, I had a fall. I had a fall after a race, so she didn't even know. She always wait for me, you know, in the tunnel. She brought some friends at work, actually some of her workers came with her that day and some friends, and they're all waiting for me. The race finished. You know, the first time Saturday after the race, he got tired, stumbled, I went over his head, got kicked in my head, had a concussion. I was knocked out. So one of the jockeys said, oh, Anthony's in an ambulance. You know, she said, what do you mean? He just rode. She said, no, after the race, he fell. So she's running to this ambulance. That's the story I got. So finally, I'm waking up, and she's looking at me. And she's like, you okay? I said, yep. The doctor's asking me, like, what race I was in, what's the number of my horse, what's the horse name, what's the trainer name? And I'm like, what? I swear to God, I didn't know anything. So when he turned his head talking to the driver, I asked her, I said, give me the program, you know, because I want to see what's the horse name, what, you know? And she's like, no, you're not getting it. Because first of
That's
all,
cheating.
Yeah, you don't know anything right now. But the next day, I'm riding for Jonathan Shepherd at Keeneland. I mean, I want to.
Mm.
The doctors say, well, I don't know about that. You have a concussion. I don't know. You got to go to the hospital and they'll check you out. She came, obviously, to the hospital and telling the doctors what to do and how to do it. And make sure he's not riding tomorrow. Don't give him
And
I keep telling the doctor, don't worry about her. She's crazy. This is my job. And she don't want me to be a jockey. She wants me to quit. I have to ride tomorrow. I'm riding for important people. And this is, he said, well, your life is important. I said, but I'm fine. My horse name is Auntie Sager and blah, blah, blah. And I tell him everything he wanted to know. He said, oh, your memory's coming back. That's good. And he said, well, you can leave. You know, you're fine to go. But she was upset about that whole situation.
Yeah.
So first thing she said is she's going to write a letter about that because the doctors didn't do their job.
No.
So I'm there at Keeneland the next day. Went to races. She said, I'm not coming. I'm upset with you. So I went in the jockey, got changed, you know, put on the silks for Jonathan Shepherd. I'm really happy. The doctor called me at Keeneland. We need to talk. Took me to his room. Who is at the room? My wife.
No.
You made me do all the steps with your toes and heels and bending over and counting backwards. And
all the concussion tests.
Everything.
Sure.
So I passed every test and she's still telling him he don't know what he's doing. I'm like, listen, I was really upset with her because this is how we, you know, make a living. Plus we doing what we love doing. So I want to ride and happen to a lot of jockeys. They ride with broken bones because you lose business later. So anyway, I rode the races. It was fine. I felt great after that. But, you know, I never hear the last of that.
You know, you bring up an issue, though, that we're not going to get into it now because we certainly don't have time. But it's something that we've done some conversation about on our Saturday morning Equine Forum show. And that's concussion testing with jockeys and the protocols that are in place at racetracks right now, which is absolutely abysmal as opposed to what we see like with the NFL and the precautions they're taking now with their athletes. Racing drops the ball. And that's one thing that we're going to continue to talk about because I'm a big believer that that needs to be improved for jockeys at the different racetracks. And it's, again, with a portion of the proceeds of this show going back to PDJF, we're big supporters. That's our official charity. Right. And you hate to hear some of those stories where maybe the protocols aren't in place and somebody like yourself who may or may not have been ready to ride was cleared to ride.
Right.
Right.
And it's, well, the doctor at a hospital, I had on my safety jacket on and I still had on my silks. He was pressing my back through the vests. And my wife keep telling him like, excuse me, you can take the zip off.
Yeah.
Take it off. You got to check his spine. He was pushing the body protector and saying, oh, he's fine. He can go home.
Wow. That's scary.
The first
That's
thing
scary.
From remembering falls, like, you know, when you fall, sometimes you pass blood in your urine because of your kidney. You can have a torn kidney. It happened to me before. So I was aware of that. So I told my wife, you know what? Let me just go to the washroom and try to see if I can pass urine and see if there's blood. Then I know I'm fine. So I went and I was, that part was fine.
Right.
Anyway.
Right. Wow. Amazing. Anthony Stephen here on Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, talking about the concussions, it's actually how I met your wife, Michelle, for the first time. She did the concussion test on me at Laurel Park and I was a little bit nervous as far as
and
if
she
I
said
would...
you failed miserably, by the way.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly. Well, Anthony, you told that great story in the first half of the program about the nun approaching you in the airport right before you won your first race and telling you you were going to win. You are a very religious person. And I had read somewhere where before each race day you spend time praying, and you've been very fortunate. You haven't sustained a catastrophic injury in your career, and I would assume that you believe that that has a lot to do with it.
I would definitely say that have a big part of it. You know, I mean, a lot of jockeys, you can see they'll make a sign on the cross before they get legged up on a horse. Everybody have their own way in doing it, but I'm telling you, it helps a lot mentally. You feel safe. Even though something might happen, at least you feel like, you know what, I ask God to help me and protect me. And so in every way, some jockey have their superstitious way and how they do things. And, you know, like, I'm a big, big believer in that.
Yeah. And here you are, 41 years old, getting ready to turn 42. And you're here riding pretty much full time in the United States and still fighting to get on those big name horses. So I'll ask you this. What is it that's still motivating you and keeping you going as a jockey?
I would say it's a dream. You know, everybody has a dream. And, you know, same with guys with horses. in the Kentucky Derby, it's like one day you're going to have a Kentucky Derby horse. It's the same with jockeys. They always believe one day I'm going to have a horse to make it to a stake race. Next day I'm going to get a horse to make it to the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, the Derby. And I mean, the Derby is really, really tough. Everybody knows that. But you cannot stop dreaming. You got to believe that one day you can make it.
Absolutely. And Anthony, you mentioned how you prepare for a race emotionally and you pray, you're religious. And how about handicapping? How do you prepare for a race as far as studying for the race and preparing yourself mentally for the judgments and decisions you have to make in the race?
I'm a big believer in replays. You know, I would go through the program, the daily racing form. I would even see what they pick to win or whatever. But I'm big believer in replays. I watch replays of every horse in my race, how they'll prefer to be in a race. But most importantly, I kind of analyze jockeys. Who is a speed rider? Even though they have a horse, is a turtle. He wants to be on the lead. Jockeys who always go on the outside. You know, certain jockeys' styles and tactics they use, I judge the horse and basically the jockey. So I would circle, oh, this jockey is on a horse, up, he's going to the lead. So I'm pretty much knowing when that gate's open, the one's going to be sending. Or the one's going to be sitting chilly like Mario Pino. Very, very good rider. I love watching him ride. Love being in a race with him. Because he's so relaxed, he's so calm. Horses can be bumping in front of him, and he's in a safe zone. Like he puts himself in a safe position in the race every time. And if he wins the race, he wins the race. If he loses the race, he loses the race. But he's not going to change his style of riding. Pretty much sit and wait and do his best.
Well, what's your biggest strength if you had to pick one?
I would say the same way Mario rides. I'm very patient. Very, very. Even in a bullring track, trainers would tell me, excuse me, it's a bullring track. Half a mile, get moving. You know, but I grew up in the English system and it's all about patience. You keep the horse as much, like the Golden Mocha race. You can see I was sitting when everybody was sending because I believe he's a sprinter. I don't know if he can really go the distance being pushed the way he was. So I waited. And when I asked him for his life, you know, and it worked out. So, but like, again, I have to go back in the part about not being a name jockey. You cannot do your own things out there. So even though you might want to sit and ride a Mario Pino race, you have to ride the trainer race. Otherwise, he's going to be on the horse next.
Right.
They can do it however they want and still ride the horse the next time. For us, it's kind of like there's a one-time deal.
Yeah. You know?
So it's tough.
Jockey Anthony Steven here on Jock Talk presented by Tito's. Only about a minute or so left here, Anthony. I always like to end by asking our guests what it is that people might not know about them. So when you're not riding races, what other hobbies or things do you enjoy doing?
I will go hiking. I love jogging. I love anything in the woods, outdoor sports.
Do you do that
mostly to help your weight? Do you have a hard time with your weight?
Not really, no.
Look at him.
I just love it.
Does he have a hard time with his weight? The guy's super fit.
My bad.
I have a hard time with my weight. I should be out there hiking and jogging. Anthony, appreciate it, my friend. So much fun to hear your story, and I know we could have gone for another hour because you have some other good ones too that we didn't get into, but appreciate it. Safe trip, and all the best moving forward.
Thank you very much. I had fun being here.
All right, Anthony, Stephen. Well, that was fun. Of course, if our listeners missed any portion of the show, they can go to
HorseRacingRadio.net.
There you go. Check out the podcast, Horse Racing Radio Network, on iTunes. We're back next week, Tuesday, another all-new Jock Talk.
Don't miss it.
For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Christina McManigal, and for our special guest, Anthony Stevens, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's.